Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, we have the FedEx St. Jude Classic. Lucas Glover may be the best golfer on earth as of August 15th, 2023. We have the AIG Women's Open in the books, along with the U.S. Women's Amateur at Bel Air Country Club, also taking place this past weekend. We have another Michigan event, the Assistant Championship at Gull Lake Country Club. We will quickly touch on that. More amateur from the men's side of things, the U.S. Amateur taking place at Cherry Hills / Colorado Golf Club this week. We are one day of stroke play, so we will update you on scores there from some Michigan guys and some other notables. We will also touch on the BMW Championship, the second of the three playoff events. We get into a little bit of the Phil Mickelson gambling story that dropped this past week. And finally, Brad and I are off to Minnesota the next 4 to 5 days. So we will dive into a little bit of a course preview. We're playing 99 holes between Wednesday and Saturday. So we will dive into that, kind of our expectations, what we're thinking. But first, Brad, Lucas Glover, they said it couldn't be done. I heard them screaming it from the rooftops. They said there's no way Lucas Glover has an inkling of a chance in Memphis this week, and he proves everyone wrong. I saw his odds going into the playoff. I want to say Pat Cantlay was like minus 160 compared to Lucas was plus 140, plus 130. So even Vegas doubted the man, but what can you say?
The guy. So on that note, and this is way, like, I saw this tweet and I can't remember who it was by, but these kind of tweets really bother me. And it was like a $100 wager on Lucas Glover to win the last two tournaments would have won you like $180,000. And while I get like it's interesting, it's like who in the heck is going to bet Lucas Glover to win back-to-back tournament? You're just teasing people with things that are unrealistic to get them to try to throw some wild bet on somebody winning back-to-back tournaments or something.
Oh, those always kill me, but I always see them on, I guess I don't see them a ton in golf, but you always see them for like an underdog team that makes a run and they win X amount of games in a row. And it's like, if you were to do this, you'd be a millionaire. It's like, well, yeah, I guess you could do a lot of things that are hypothetical to become a millionaire.
Right. If my aunt was a man, she'd be my uncle.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. This is like a complete redemption tour that he's on. That video of him missing that 2-foot putt from the Travelers Championship, five or six, it might have been 2016 even. This was a while ago. That video is circulating online right now. And to go from that video and not being able to make a 1-foot putt to some of those putts he made coming down the stretch on Sunday, back against the wall, he makes that miraculous par putt on, oh, maybe 14, I would say. It was the hole before the par three that he put in the water. Puts the ball in the water, hits a, I would say, a very average wedge shot. So he's putting for four, and he ends up making that one too. Like he made just a putt after putt after putt from a guy that certainly never known for his putting by any means. So pretty blown away that he was capable. I mean, you could say the week prior at Wyndham, not exactly the best field. You can make reasons as to why Lucas Glover won that golf tournament, or excuses to why he won, but I don't really know if you really can come up with any this week with a fully loaded field, top 70 players, and he goes out there and gets it done.
Yeah, especially with that monstrosity of a putter that he uses that we were just ripping on last week, where it seems like you literally just take a block of iron and weld it onto a stick and call it good.
Yeah, those eBay prices have to be through the roof.
So does that lead to a larger question of, does the technology in putters really matter that much? I mean, that is the most simple putter that there is.
No, I don't think, I really don't think so. I mean, I think obviously like it has to, I think just whatever works. I think we said that a couple weeks ago, but if you could putt with a broomstick, if that's what makes the ball go in the hole in the fewest amount of strokes, I would putt with quite literally anything.
Especially now, like you look at, I think it's the TaylorMade Spider putters, where it literally comes with this little weight that you can adjust back and forth throughout the putter, and like all this little stuff. It seems like is that just all like a sham to upsell a putter, and you know you can put a $430 price tag on a putter that's got a movable weight.
Yeah. Yes, I think it is all a sham. And I think the golf industry in general, golf manufacturing industry in general, is quite a bit of a sham. But that might be a story for a different day. What are your thoughts on? I think it's really hard to not give Memphis, the home hub of FedEx, an event. But I don't know how you can give them an event in mid-August in Memphis. I mean, heat index of well over 100 degrees most of the days. And if it wasn't hot, it was raining. there was nothing they could do. I don't understand the logic. Obviously, I do understand what I first said. You need to give them, if they're footing the bill, you got to take care of them. But give them a designated event in March. Right?
I don't disagree with that. But I also raise the question of where else would you play? Because I feel that there's areas you could say, oh, well, it's usually, you know, cooler here. But like, I mean, you think about even where we live in Michigan in August, it can get up to 90 plus. It's not often, but they're obviously not going to bring it to Michigan or northern Minnesota or like Minnesota, Wisconsin. I guess they could do they could probably do Wisconsin, but Wisconsin also just gets crazy hot in southern Wisconsin. So,
yeah. So I think you have to go. You have to next year. They're actually going away from Chicago. I think they're going to Colorado next year for the BMW Championship. But I think you have to go New York, Chicago, Atlanta. Like if you're trying to make these FedEx Cups as big as you can, you got to bring them to a big market. I don't necessarily think that Memphis is, I mean, the crowds were not good. Hard to blame people. I mean, who would want to go walk a golf tournament for 4 or 5 hours in 110 degree heat index? But I think New York is the Northeast. Like when it was in Boston, people always turned out for that. When it, like the Deutsche Bank, I think is what it was called, at TPC Boston. Anywhere in New York, I think would do well. I think anywhere in the Northeast is where you have to kind of gravitate towards.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I wouldn't hate the idea of a New York, a Boston, Massachusetts up that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it was just, you're looking at the highlights of these guys, and I mean, they've got towels over their heads, like just soaked in water, and their entire shirts and pants are just soaked. They're like just absolutely dying. And the pictures of Lucas Glover holding the trophy, where it looks like a man who ran like 10 miles while wearing his pants. Yeah. I just got to say it. Those pants had some cotton in it. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We all know they had a little cotton in there.
I don't know. I couldn't tell who his clothing sponsor was by what he was wearing. I wasn't really looking for it. I just kind of thought of this right now. But if you're his clothing sponsor and you're in Memphis in August, you can't give the man khaki. You got to give him something darker, and that's all you can, especially because it's always wet there too. Like we saw Tom Kim by the back nine, he was wearing capris on Thursday because of how damp and mucky it was out there. You got to give the man dark blue. Or even black is better than what we were watching on Sunday.
It literally looked like he was wearing like an adult diaper and had an accident.
Yeah, it was not good. Which I have written in the notes. What are your we've seen it circulating all this beginning of this week. But what are your thoughts on shorts?
So, I'll say that I have no issue with shorts. I feel that, I think there's like a two sides to this. First, I don't care about shorts. I feel like the idea of having to wear pants is just bringing in that idea of like elitist golf, where, you know, you think of uppity country clubs that have really strict dress codes, and you're not allowed to use your cell phone, and you have to change your shoes in the locker room. And that feels like not open to the average golfer. But then I also see the other side of it, and you mentioned this in the in our intro before the show. Golf pants are just so light nowadays. I mean, like, I wear golf pants to work every day, and they are not warm. They're you know, there's barely anything to them. So I think it also ultimately comes down to who their sponsor is, though. I mean, you and I have been known to rip on Nike golf. I certainly wouldn't be wearing Nike golf pants. And I think that there's probably other manufacturers who have heavier materials. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that aspect to it. But you get the right golf pants and you can barely even feel them.
Oh, yeah. No, and I totally agree. And that's kind of where I stand. I think I'd be totally fine if there was some kind of like heat index number that if they hit X amount of degrees, like 100 and anything over 100 degrees heat index, let them wear shorts sort of thing. I would be totally fine with. Back to the golf though, I think it's talk about Patrick Cantlay working his ass off to get into this playoff. Shoots a Sunday 64, lowest round on the top of leaderboard by beating Rory by one, and then just pull hooks into the water on the playoff hole and kind of just hands it to Lucas Glover. Made it interesting. That was he gave himself a read off of Lucas's on his what would be his third shot, and just couldn't convert it. But this is now becoming a little bit of a storyline that Patrick Cantlay just loves hitting the ball left when the pressure's on.
He also just like absolutely loves the playoffs. He's always in contention at the end of the year. Like, and by contention, like top five has a chance to win, it seems. Or does win. He has won.
Yeah, it feels like Taurus and the Hare sort of thing, where like slow and steady always ends up being there at the end. Like, you never really think Patrick Cantlay, knowingly very unmarketable person, but and we know, and he just manages just kind of hang around. Nobody really talks about him all year, and then here he is just right at the top of the leaderboard in all the playoff events, and he has been for years. And just rounding out that the rest of that leaderboard, I mean, once again, Lucas Glover to be able to hold off this leaderboard that was behind him was very impressive, because you kept seeing it on Saturday and Sunday, like, look at this stacked leaderboard. Lucas Glover obviously won. Patrick Cantlay lost in the playoff, finishing second. Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood tied at 14 under. Tommy Fleetwood had a chance on 18 to make into that playoff and just left it a little bit high. It looked like nobody could be able to. No one was able to read that putt from the center of the green. It seemed like it kind of straightened out at the end. Taylor Moore continues to play really well this season, finishing fifth. Adam Shank, kind of just out of nowhere here. I wouldn't say out of nowhere in respect, out of respect for Peter. This has been a long time coming, but he is playing well, finished T6, along with Cam Davis, Sung Jae-im, and Russell Henley, rounding out the top six. So I don't really have a ton else from the FedEx St. Jude Classic, outside of the fact that I don't know how you continue to keep it in Memphis in this time. It's just so hit or miss with the weather. Not really hit or miss as far as the heat, but as far as the rain, inclement weather that actually stops the play. So I don't know what you do moving forward. Looks like they are here again next year. I don't know what you do after that. I'm sure it's probably already set in stone for a while.
Yeah, just this time of year is just tough. It's almost like you wish they could just avoid, they could just shift the whole season and avoid this month. That would be like the perfect world, but obviously that is a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, maybe. Well, on to the Tour Championship. So let's move on to a little bit of women's golf. So they had their final major of the year, the AIG Women's Open at Walton Heath Golf Club. Lilia Vu shoots 67 in the final round to hold off Charlie Hall, the hometown girl from England. Lilia is now the number one player in the Rolex rankings, along with number one player in the world. She is the first American since Julie Inkster back in 1999 to win two majors. She won the Chevron Championship earlier this year alongside, obviously, the AIG Women's Open. So congratulations to Lilia Vu. I mentioned Charlie's name. She struggled a little bit on Sunday, shooting a 73, finished 8 under par, solo second. Jiayi Shin finished a 7 under par. Amy Yang, along with Haiju Kim, both finished at 6 under par, along with Allison Cortez, the next American, along with Ali Ewing and Angel Ying, all finished at 4 under par, T6th. So we'll. And then just one more notable, Nelly Korda, after what I would say a so-so season for her, finished T11th, minus 2. And then here we're going to start in a little bit of an apology tour for the U.S. Women's Am at Bel Air Country Club. I just totally botched not seeing Haley Borges' name in the on the field list. And, of course, because I didn't see her name, she goes on to make the semifinals, plays really well all week, kind of the underdog by far in comparison to who she was matched up against in the quarterfinals, which was just littered with girls with a lot of, I wouldn't say Haley doesn't have the talent, but doesn't have maybe the accolades that some of these other girls did have. But she hung strong, ended up losing in the semifinals. Annika Dai lost in the round of 64, but that did make way for Megan Schofield from Auburn to win in the championship match 4-3 over fellow SEC member from LSU, Latana Stone. Megan, which is kind of crazy to think about, at the age of only 22, she is the oldest champion to win the event since 2000. So just kind of goes to show how good these girls are at a really young age to win before the age of 22 for 24 years now. And also worth mentioning, she's the first Floridian to win since Morgan Pressel in 2005. I don't know if you've been watching or have you been catching any of Morgan Pressel on broadcast. I feel like she might have been on the Open maybe.
And I don't believe so.
No, she does a pretty good job. I've been pleasantly surprised by Morgan Pressel's broadcasting abilities.
Maybe I have, and I never pay attention to the names, I'm going to be honest.
All right, moving on. Let's go back to Michigan. The assistant championship at Gull Lake Country Club. Gareth Lappin from Stonewater Country Club wins the event. He lapped the field, shot 7 under par. Cody Houghton from Red Run Golf Club finished at 3 under. Cole Mink from Watermark Country Club finished at 1 under. Those are the only three guys to shoot under par over the two rounds. Looks like Cooper Bell from Blythefield finished at plus 1. Some other notables, Tim Pierce, who we've had on the podcast before, shot plus 3, 72, 73 to finish T8th. Cole Ketterer, who is a Harbor Springs resident, finished T13th at plus 7. And then Kyle Roman from Hidden River Golf and Country Golf and Casting Club, rather, also finished at T13th, plus 7. All right, moving on to the USAM this week at Cherry Hills / Colorado Golf Club just for the stroke play, and then it'll move on to just Cherry Hills for the match play. We had a little bit of representation from Michigan. Looks like, I believe if my math is correct, I think we had 4 total Michigan residents. Andrew Tyndall threw one round, struggled a little bit on the first round. He is plus 12. Jimmy Dales from Northville is plus 7. Yuki Liu from Michigan is plus 7 as well. Ashton McCullough from Michigan State had a great freshman year. He is going into his sophomore year fresh off of the Canadian Amateur victory. He is at plus 5. Lorenzo Panilli, the Michigan Junior AM champion, heading to Michigan State in the fall, also at plus 5. Kazuma Kabori, the reigning what would that be? The U.S. Junior AM champion is at plus one. I have a couple other notables. Matthew McLean, the reigning mid-AM champion from last year, is at minus two, T19th. And then Lou Clanton, feel like I would just include him because he's been on the Good Good channel, which Brad and I both watch. He is at minus two. As far as the leaderboard goes, Samson Yang Yi Zheng from China is at minus six. Pearson Hunt is at minus five. Riggs Johnson is at minus five. And Ben James at minus five to round out just the top of the leaderboard so far. We will report back with some scores as far as everything should be in the books by next episode. So we will report some details there. Hopefully some of these guys that are hanging on the outside of the cut line can make a move here. Luckily, they both, those guys that are struggling so far from Michigan, are all played Colorado Golf Club, or rather Cherry Hills the first round, which looks like it's playing much harder. So they get to go to Colorado Golf Club now and hopefully post a good number. All right. Well, that was a mouthful. So let's move on to the BMW Championship at Olympia Fields, just outside of Chicago. We're back in the Midwest. Back in the Midwest where we belong. Not going to be, it might be hot, but it's not going to be Memphis hot, I don't think.
No, not quite, thankfully.
Yes. Just some quick course stats before Brad runs through the odds board. Stock par 70. Driving the ball is key at this golf course. Back in the 2019-2020 season, it was very stingy as far as hitting the fairways. Only hit 6.74 out of 14 fairways. So a little bit less than half for the field on average. Scoring average of 71.8 in 2020. That's the second hardest par 70, just behind the PGA National Champions course. Back in 2020, there was only five guys under par across the 72 holes. So this is a big boys golf course, major venue that plays like it. I'm just seeing if there's anything else worth mentioning. All the rough is bluegrass, trimmed to 2 inches, combination of bent poa greens, running about 12 on the stimp meter. Worth mentioning, the 18th hole is just an absolute brute. Played about plus 0.3, 0.4 strokes over par in 2020, making it the third most challenging finishing hole on the tour in 2019-2020. So as far as the odds boards go, what are we looking at?
So this week we are looking at Rory McIlroy being the favorite to win at 6.5 to 1. Right behind him, we've got Scottie Scheffler 7 to 1, John Rahm at 9 to 1, and then our boy Mr. Playoffs himself, Patrick Cantlay 10 to 1, Xander and Victor both at 16 to 1, Tommy Fleetwood 22 to 1, Max Homa 25 to 1, as well as Tyrrell Hatton, and then Colin Morikawa 28 to 1, and then I will round it out here with Mr. Jordan Spieth at 30 to 1. How do you feel about Rory being the favorite this week? So I think that we've been very vocal on doubting Rory. I don't see a world where John Rahm is not the favorite this week. I know he played pretty poorly last week, but he's still John Rahm. So I see a 9 to 1 as not exceptional value, but I don't hate it at the same time.
For John Rahm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't hate it either. I don't know what you attribute last week to for John Rahm, but I don't necessarily think it's hard to. I think it's hard for the book not to put Rory at the top right now with eight consecutive top 10 finishes since the PGA Championship. So he's just been playing some like extraordinary golf over the last 2 or 3 months now. So just to, I think it'd be hard to put Rahm ahead of him, but just with obviously the course history, him winning in 2020, and the fact that he is John Rahm, he was number one in the the FedEx Cup points for a reason. I do see some value there. I think it's, he's very much like, I'm going to, like, oh, like it's time to wake up sort of thing. I think he will awaken the beast a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like he's one of those guys that he just doesn't have two bad back-to-back weeks. He's great at bouncing back. You mentioned him being victorious here in 2020. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is a reason of why I mentioned him as someone who should be should maybe have lower odds this week. And a few other names from 2020 that I thought might be worth mentioning. We've got Hideki at a T3, Tony Finau at a solo fifth, and then Matthew Fitzpatrick at a T6. So a few guys who will be looking to play well, especially with Ryder Cup coming up, and who have had history of playing well here. So some guys to kind of keep an eye on, maybe take a look at if you can find some value at them in some various finishing positions. I wouldn't be shocked to see them play well.
A name that just like is jumping off the board to me, just given the fact of how hard of a golf course it is and how he plays in hard golf courses, is Victor Hovland. That's the obviously played well enough this past week. Didn't have a great showing in 2020, but he was also still pretty young at that point. I think he's made obvious leaps and bounds forward since then. So that's a name that jumps off the page immediately when I look at it. And did you mention Lucas Glover's name?
I did not. I certainly did not.
Oh, we'll get the people what they want.
Oh, man. Am I just stubborn? I have such a hard time. So, like, Lucas Glover has done nothing but prove me wrong. And I'm still. So, Hunter texts me on, what was it, Sunday night or Monday night, maybe, and says, is Lucas Glover going to make the Ryder Cup team? And I know that you were saying that half jokingly.
Maybe a quarter jokingly, but also
it's like, I mean, it's not a crazy topic to discuss.
No, it's, I mean, it's not. I don't think
why am I having such a hard time with Lucas Glover? I'm asking
because he didn't play in a single major this year. He didn't qualify for a single major, and now he's just gonna somehow bust the door down to get out of the Ryder Cup team. And I don't know. And it's shocking to see if he plays well enough. Like, I was looking, I think I have him pulled up right here. So we're just going to do a little Ryder Cup talk now. So he is at, I have no idea how many points you get per win for the Ryder Cup, but he's only like 160, 170 points below Denny McCarthy. And he's only 400 points below Justin Thomas. So if he has another good week with Justin Thomas sitting with his putt in his hand at home, I don't know. And he jumps up a couple more spots and he's in 14th come tour championship time. What are you going to, leave him at home?
Can you imagine him on the team? Just picture it.
So I think the guys on tour have to just love him. He's just like a good old Southern boy.
Oh yeah.
And very nice. Were trying to find somebody to put with Brian Harmon. And I think they might have just found him. Unless that was going to be Wyndham's job.
Oh man, Wyndham is another story. If we are going to truly transition to Ryder Cup, talk about just total stinker last week. He didn't end up finishing DFL, but he was pretty darn close. And I think it begs the question of, so I understand he won two events this year, one of them being obviously the US Open, which is a major event. But does that have too much weight on the standings now? Because he's an auto lock for the team, and he just stunk it up last week.
Well, I think that's, but you're on like the other side of the spectrum too far, where you're just thinking like two, he was like on a, leading up to the US Open, he was like winning, not winning, but he was placing well. So I don't think one tournament, especially when he's already a lock to make East Lake, like you don't necessarily have to show out at Memphis, especially when it's a not like you can miss the cut, but you also can just not give it your all and realize it's 110 degrees out and go out there and beat around for 4 days and get to Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I will say the U.S. Open was on June 18th. Since then, he has finished T29, T25, T33, and T66.
Oh, boy. Did you peak too early?
Yeah, did he peak? Yeah, he might have. He might have. He's also just I don't think he's captain consistency, seeing as in between his two wins this year that were only, let's see, what was that, like less than a month apart, there was a missed cut in there, so.
Yeah, well, he was obviously at the Open, so I don't really, like, American at the Open, which it only can be his first, second time there. Like, I don't really expect big things. I assume he's at the Scottish Open. Don't really expect mm-hmm. big things there. So I can make some excuses for why Wyndham is not playing his best golf at the moment, but we'll just get into it before we get back to the. So I have a list of the names of the U.S. Ryder Cup team, and I think the top 10. I think Scotty, Wyndham, Patrick Cantlay, Brian Harman, Brooks Koepka, Max Homa, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth. That's like a guaranteed lock. That's top eight. Not guaranteed. Obviously, somehow Zach Johnson could leave off Xander and Jordan, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then, so from there, looking at, that's 9 through 16, Cameron Young, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Denny McCarthy, Lucas Glover. So if that looks like that is 9 names. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Eight names. So 4 out of those 8 guys are not making it. Which is a little crazy to think about, just given the names and who they are. So I don't think, so we'll run through them one by one, starting at we'll start at the top. So Cameron Young, is he getting a spot? 9th?
Yes.
9th? Okay. Cameron, yep. That is one I'm not sold on. Colin Morikawa, I think, gets a spot.
Yes, Colin for sure.
So Colin is in. How about Keegan Bradley?
No. I think no.
Okay. Sam Burns.
Nope.
Ricky Fowler.
Yes.
And Justin Thomas?
Yes.
So that's your 4.
Let me put an asterisk on it. That's the 4 that I think Zach Johnson will pick. That is not maybe necessarily the 4 that I think he should pick, but I think that those are the 4 that he's going to pick.
Well, who do you think he's going to pick? Or who do you think he should pick?
I don't think he should pick Justin Thomas, just based on how he's playing.
Yes.
So I think, but he's going to, because it's just so hard with the Ryder Cup. Like, there's intangibles that come with the Ryder Cup, and Justin Thomas passes those tests every single time. But there's also obviously the golf aspect of it, and he does not pass that test right now. So it's one of those things where, do I think he should be picked? No. Do I think Zach Johnson will pick him? Yes. Do I hate that Zach Johnson will pick him? No.
No. I think if we were in the United States this year, like in a hypothetical, magical world that this Ryder Cup was in the United States, I think you'd leave Justin Thomas off the team. And I don't think that'd be like an issue at all. But I think the fact that you're going to Europe, where those crowds are always just like fascinatingly loud. We thought that the Whistling Straits first tee was loud. I like still think about the Ryder Cup from, that would have been 2017, 2018 over in Europe, where those stands around the first tee were so big. And it was so loud. Like, that's not where I imagine, like, Sam Burns or guys like that excelling. And that's nothing against Sam Burns, but he's on, like, a little bit of a stinker right now. He can't hit the ball in the hole to save his life. But that's what Justin Thomas, that's where I think you can look at what he brings from that aspect and then just say, well, we'll figure out the golf side of things.
Right. Yeah, he has that those intangibles that kind of just like grittiness of being able to have someone heckle you, but use it as fuel. Whereas a lot of guys can kind of that really gets in their head. Like I think of, I mean, the ultimate example is like Bryson DeChambeau. I think that he's the last people for some reason are bringing him up about the Ryder Cup because he shot this 58. I hate that so much. I think he's a terrible fit, but guys like that who, they will get into it with the audience, or they get heckled and they get rattled, and then they have a bad stretch or something like that. You need guys who can use that as fuel and stay laser focused, and that's Justin Thomas to a T. I mean, he almost has that's like I would say almost the most Tiger-esque thing about Justin Thomas is that he has that like. You heckle him or you say he's not going to do something, then he's just, I mean, he's going to go out and do it,
No, yeah, absolutely agree. I do, you mentioned Bryson's name. Somebody on Twitter, some just shining knight, went and just completely debunked his 58 with like stroke gained stats, and like he only gained like 6 shots on the field in to shoot a 58, which is just unheard of, and just goes to show how easy the golf course was playing and whatnot. So I got a good chuckle out of, because it was, I mean, it was par 70, it was at the Greenbrier, it was lift clean place, like a lot of things were working in his favor on that day. So no, I don't think Bryson DeChambeau should be on the Ryder Cup team, sitting at 58th in the standings.
So, random, this is just because we're talking about him. He, did you see he made a YouTube video about him shooting 58? And he titled the video, "This is what shooting 58 in a professional golf tournament looks like."
Love it, love it.
So
Content
Bryson.
creator first, PGA or pro golfer second.
The funniest thing about it is it's clearly like he must have some agreement with LIV where he's got someone just like filming him or
Oh yeah.
something, or he can use their broadcast and post it on his own. It's not like he had like his own professional like videographer there. He's just like reusing their video.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I assume so. I'm not entirely sure. Well,
Yeah.
is that
But anyway, moving on, I want to continue this Ryder Cup really quick because you mentioned Cameron Young and that you're not sold on him. Why are you, what do you, what are your thoughts on Cameron Young?
he can't putt the ball, which is challenging in Ryder Cup. I think it's really important to be able to make a putt when you need to in match play. And I don't think Cam Young necessarily fits that mold. I think he can drive the ball to oblivion. So I think that's where he comes in really nicely for like a foursomes pairing, where he can just beat it down there, or even, I guess, even a better ball where he can just hit it long and hope that put him with somebody that hits it a little straighter, like a Brian Harman, for example, and just let him loose and see what he can do, because his driver is his weapon, but he just needs to be in the right spots. And I haven't looked enough at this golf course, but when I think of European golf, I think of tighter fairways, and there's more of an emphasis on making, I wouldn't say more of an emphasis on making putts, but you're gonna be left making more of those putts, just because whether it be you're out of position a little bit off a tee, but it's not like it's gonna be resort style huge fairways sort of thing, which is where I think he may excel, but maybe not the best fit for. But how are you gonna leave the ninth place guy off the team?
That's where I was going with you almost read my mind, where I was going with my next question for you is, so we went down the list and I gave you my thoughts on who Zach will pick. How about let's hear your four. Who do you think we'll do a two-parter. Who do you think Zach will take? And if that is not who you personally would take, then who would you take?
I think Zach Johnson takes Cam Young, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, and Justin Thomas. I think Keegan Bradley is Justin Thomas 2.0 from that. I think he can get, like, he is very much chip on his shoulder Boston athlete, where he just it just kind of runs in his blood a little bit. So I don't know what his record is. I don't think it's great. I think we've looked this up before, and it's actually a really poor record in team competition. But he also has that flair that Justin Thomas brings. And he's not, like, substantially ahead of Ricky Fowler, but I do think it'll come down to a lot of how these next 2 weeks play out. I know that's a little bit of a cop-out, but...
So Keegan Bradley is 4-3 in his Ryder Cup history, and his two appearances were in 2012 at Medina and then 2014 at Glen Eagle. So I don't know if we can necessarily... Those were some rough years for the U.S. So
yes, yeah. So maybe just tribute to that. So that's kind of where I lean. I think it's between Keegan and Ricky. I think either guy does really well in the locker room. I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's like really just kind of a dealer's choice. If I were to lean a direction, I would lean towards Keegan Bradley. But I'll be damned if Lucas Glover goes out and wins this week. He's in.
He might. He just might. Well, if he wins, then yeah, for sure. Which would just be the wildest story of all time.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. I think a lot of people were saying this exact same thing going in to this past week, but I do not see him winning three in a row.
If he did, and then he made the Ryder Cup team by some miracle, surely he would have to be the only person in the history of the Ryder Cup to play in the Ryder Cup while also not qualifying for any majors.
Oh, 100%. Unless it was injury related, 100%.
Right.
No, there's no way. That would be
what a year.
Yeah, that would be unheard of. All right, anything else from, I know we kind of just, we skipped right over the BMW Championship into the Ryder Cup. Anybody else?
Yeah, let's double it back to the BMW. I didn't really have, we went through 2020 and a few guys that we were big on. What else do we have anything else for the BMW or did you have anything else?
No, just any other players that jumped off the board to you that you saw. I mentioned Victor. I like Victor. I actually don't like Rory to win this week, but I do like a top, maybe a top 10 finish. I mean, it's hard to argue his recent form and maybe a couple of those being backdoors, but that's all right. We take backdoors and T10 still T10. I don't know. I don't necessarily have high hopes for Sky this week. I mean, he still just cannot putt. And I don't know. He switches putters, switches to, well, I'll tell him, his first mistake was switching to a TaylorMade Spider. I don't know what he was thinking there. But so another rough week in Memphis. If it sounds like a broken record for Scotty. He was T20th in 2020. So, obviously, T to green, he is a very solid player. Well, more than solid. Phenomenal player. So, this course may fit him well from that standpoint. If he can just get the putter going, which sounds very obvious. Obviously, a force to be reckoned with. Max Homa played well in Memphis. Nice to see him kind of getting back on track. Tommy Fleetwood just cannot get over the hump. It kills me. He just can't do it.
Nope.
And I don't know what to make of it. I feel bad. Jordan Spieth, I won't say he choked on Sunday, but he definitely did not play his best golf over the weekend. So, obviously, I'm not going to pick him.
But he's saving it for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, definitely. So those are kind of the names just running through some of the marquee players. I do want to quickly talk about the – so this was maybe even this weekend or late last week, this story about Phil Mickelson drops gambling. I think it's Billy Walters, I believe is his name. Did an interview with Alan Shupnick from Fire Pit Stories, and there were some pretty, I would say, shocking excerpts from that article. And I think you mentioned, Brad, you have a couple of you want to read, or one of them you want to read.
Yeah, I've got a few points that Golf Digest kind of highlighted in their article that was just giving a kind of high-level overview of the entire interview. So between the years of 2010 and 2014, this is just a snapshot of kind of his gambling habits and truly to the level that it got to. He wagered $110,000 to win $100,000, a total of 1,115 times. On 858 separate occasions, he bet $220,000 to win $200,000. The sum of those wagers came to more than $311 million. In 2011 alone, he made 3,154 bets, which comes out to an average of nearly 9 bets placed per day. And then the last little, or sorry, two last tidbits here. On one day in 2011, June 22nd, he made 43 bets on Major League Baseball games, resulting in $143,000 in losses. And then the last little point that they kind of highlighted here, he has made 7,065 wagers on football, basketball, and baseball combined. So those are some pretty alarming numbers. I think they jump off the page for sure. And clearly, the man, I mean, he's admitted it himself that he had a problem. I do want to just kind of just to play devil's advocate, I guess, here. He was also making a ton of money. So the equivalent of him, I think somewhere in this article it goes on to say that he lost somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million. But for a guy who made close to a billion, you're talking 10% of his wages. That's, if you make 100 grand a year, that's 10 grand. For if you put it in more like average person income, it's not. It's still bad. I think that if Lauren found out I lost 10% of my salary on gambling, she'd leave me. But it's still, you just have to take that in perspective. Obviously, he has a problem, but it's not like he's like bank,
Yeah, I think you make a good point that from like it's all relative to how much money you have in the bank. Just like the sheer number of bets placed
That's the thing.
is
It's the
like sh
volume.
it's shocking. Like, I don't know, even if they were all $1 bets, just to like have the time and this, and I'm imagining he was calling Billy Walters and saying like, "Hey, I want to place this bet." Billy would either was Billy his was his bully was Billy his bookie, or was Billy just in Vegas and would go place the bet for him?
I that is a good question based upon how this is laid out, and I didn't, it's a pretty lengthy interview. I didn't go into full detail of it. It seems as if he was just placing the bets for him.
Well,
But
whatever Billy was
granted,
getting paid, he wasn't getting paid enough.
oh no.
He better be getting like a decent percentage. And if it was losing, then I don't even know how that would work as a bookie. So that was my one. I'm not like super guy. The guy had a gambling addiction. I think that's pretty clear. The sheer number of bets, pretty shocking. The overall amount of money lost is not. Like, I mean, it's a lot of money, but I don't, it's not like, it's, I'm not like overly, I wouldn't say I'm overly surprised. Like, I think we all knew that Phil liked to gamble even before this became, even way before the story, like within the last couple of years, it's become evident that he had an issue. So I wouldn't say I'm shocked about the number, but I'm definitely shocked to just like the, whatever that number you said, bets per 9 bets per day, that kind of thing is just like, to even know, that almost sounds like you just had no idea what was happening. Like, how do you know what's happening in those games enough to make a like an educated bet? You're just betting.
No,
You're just
you're
betting.
like straight up gambling. I mean, there's no like sort of in research I can't imagine. I mean, and then the one that really got me is like the day, the one day, 43 bets made in one day. I'd be curious to know if you could even go on FanDuel in the modern era and if it would even allow you to place 43 bets in one day. Yeah, because you know how it gives you the warning, like, oh, you've been on for so-and-so time, you know?
Yeah. FanDuel would shut Phil down quick.
Oh, yeah.
Wagered $3 million in the last 2 days. Are you sure you want to do this?
Now I'm just like genuinely curious because this is just a random number. So if they're saying he bet 7,065 times on football, basketball, and baseball combined, and there's 365 days in a year, he could have made a bet every single day for 19.3 years straight.
That's a lot. That's a lot. No, there's no getting around the fact that's a lot of bets.
The average man lives to like what, 80? That's like 20% of his life. He could have been making a bet every day.
That's incredible. Not in a good way either.
No.
All right. So I think we'll update you if anything else comes out of that. I saw there was something in that article about him betting on the Ryder Cup, which I don't know where I stand on Phil Mickelson these days, but I don't think he did that. I'd like to think he has a little bit more integrity than betting on the Ryder. I do want to believe that. So I saw that was in the article, yeah. And I was like, I don't know about that. I think he adamantly denied it. And I'm in the, as of right now, my flag is planted firmly in the Phil did not bet on the Ryder Cup, because that seems really scummy. And I don't think he did that.
Yeah, I just... No, I can't see him doing that. And I think it also, so here's a spin-off question from that is, would it even be, so say he places a bet on USA to win before the Ryder Cup. I mean, he's just betting on himself to win. Is that really that bad? I mean, obviously if he bets on Europe and he just totally tosses it, that's not, obviously that's bad. But if you just bet on yourself to win, is there really any bad negative to that in your thought?
No, I mean, no, from like what I'm from my thought, no, from the law, yes, that would not be. So I think that's like what happened to Pete Rose. I think, as far as I know, Pete Rose was betting on his teams to win the games. It was not, he was never throwing the game, because that's where I think you cross a very obvious line of just being a dickhead. But if you if you are wagering on your team to win, I don't really see the logical problem with it, but someone does. Someone far more important than myself does.
Yeah, I'd love for them to explain that one to me, but I don't think they'll have time for us.
Nope.
So I guess what's the last thing we got then? Just Minnesota?
Yeah. So we'll let's jump into that. So I'll just quickly touch on where we're playing. So we're leaving tomorrow morning from Petoskey around 7:45, and we're heading up to Marquette to play at Graywalls, which will be Brad and I's first time. I'm super stoked about Graywalls. I've heard nothing. I wouldn't say I've heard nothing but good things about it, which is why my curiosity is so piqued. I've heard that it is, I mean, everything you could dream about, and then I've also heard it is really, really hard. And if you don't have a good attitude, you'll just get your teeth kicked in from start to finish, and you really won't have that good of a time. I typically like golf courses, what I'm imagining this golf course is like, where it's really going to make you think from the second you tee off until the second you hole your putt on 18. I mean, that is where I think golf is at its finest. So I'm very excited about Graywalls. What are your kind of expectations for Graywalls?
It's definitely the course that I'm most excited to play out of this entire trip. You and I have talked about for at least the last 2 years trying to do an Upper Peninsula swing with that package deal that they do that includes Graywalls. But yeah, I'm so excited for this course, especially for me being someone who played golf a fair amount in Colorado. I think it's going to have some aspects of it with those big rock formations that is going to be similar to Colorado. And I'll just say it right now. We're definitely going to have to throw down a few funsy balls, and you just try to hit them off the rocks and see if you can get it to land on the green. And
oh, yeah.
And so you mentioned, you know, the challenge of it. You do have to have some fun with it. You don't get to play rock formations like that every day. So, but there's also going to be that aspect of it where, like you mentioned, having to think on every single shot. I've never played the course, but based on videos that I've seen, there's going to be a number of shots where the best target line is not necessarily at the pin. And you have to play the ground and play the land that the course was built on. And I too enjoy that kind of golf very much. I think it opens you up more. It kind of gets you thinking and keeps you, I want to say almost keeps you a little bit more focused. You know, we've talked about it in past where you can play a course to death and you just know it like the back of your hand, and you're almost going through the motions. You know exactly what club you're going to hit before you even get to the hole. So I'm excited for Gray Walls,
yeah,
to say the least.
And typically, first time playing it, I play it more conservative, which ends up helping my score overall. So I am very excited for that. So then we will finish that round, hopefully around 5:30, get back in the car for 3 more hours. We're going to stay at a VRBO in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin, which I'm looking forward to. It actually looks like a pretty nice little cabin. We'll wake up very early on Thursday, probably like 5:30, get on the road again, drive 3 more hours to the north side of Gull Lake, which is in Minnesota, and we're going to play Grandview Lodge, the Pines course, which is a 27-hole facility. I believe we are playing the Woods to Marshes. I know absolutely nothing about this course. It looks nice, I guess, from the pictures. So we'll see, I guess, on that one. We'll report back details. Really couldn't find anything on it.
The website's pretty bare. They do have some photos, and it looks really nice. And I was looking at the scorecard. You said we're playing the Preserve.
The Pines.
So we are playing the Pines, which we'll play Woods to Marsh, you said?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yep.
Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. So it looks like it still has some meat to it. So it looks like it's going to be a fun little golf course.
Yeah. So I think it's very much from what I'm envisioning, and I will report back if I am completely wrong, but it seems like Minnesota golf is very much target golf, from the sense of there is marsh and trees. Every picture I've seen comes accompanied with very big trees and wetlands that looks like they just gobble up golf balls. So we'll do that Thursday morning, and then we'll drive to the southern part of Gull Lake, which is where we're actually staying for the weekend. We're gonna play a nine holes on their par 3 course Thursday night with all the guys that are playing this weekend, and then Friday, and this is an all Ryder Cup event, so Friday is all team format. So we'll do 18 holes on the east course, Pine Beach East, I think, and then Friday afternoon we'll do 18 holes on Pine Beach West. I don't know what to make of these golf courses. I can make the most out of just about anything. They look the Pine Beach West, and I probably have these all messed up. Might be the East is par 70. It looks like it's a little bit shorter, like 6,100 yards. Just some weird hole. There's a par 6, which I don't think I've ever played a par 6 besides maybe at Bear River Lynx. Didn't Bear River Lynx have a par 6? Does that sound right?
Bear River Lynx. Sounds
where
familiar.
Kai,
what is that?
You, me, Kai, and Zach went and played that one time on the way to Springbrook.
Bear River. Oh, yeah. That's not open anymore, right?
No, it's... Oh,
yeah.
She's
oh, my God. It had that one hole that was like 60 yards.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first
yep.
Hole.
I'm remembering now.
Yeah. So there's a par 6. It looks like it's... I wouldn't say these two courses look like the best courses ever, but... I'm still very excited. Pine Beach East is like a par 65, 7 par 3s. So we'll make the most of it. And then the Classic is on Saturday. That's kind of their marquee golf course. I'm really looking forward to that. that has some very good ratings and rankings from a national standpoint. So that should be fun. I haven't really done a ton of research on the classic, to be honest with you. So have you really done anything?
I watched some videos. So this is almost giving me big Lasonia vibes, where it's one of those really nice courses that's so far off the beaten path that it doesn't get the kind of like marketing, I guess you could say, or the exposure that it deserves. I did find some videos on YouTube that had some flyovers, ton of water. You mentioned it earlier, Minnesota being target golf. Actually, funny enough, on the Grandview Lodge scorecard, it explicitly says that you're only allowed 3 minutes to look for a lost ball. So I have a feeling that I might have to go out and buy some more golf balls before this trip, because
I sent you a picture yesterday. It might even been Monday. It might have been Sunday night, which just goes to show how excited I am for this trip, that I was already lining my golf balls. I think I lined like 12 to 15 A-player golf balls. And once those are gone, hopefully they won't be gone, I have a 12-pack of Kirklands that are coming out to play. But I'm a little nervous. You know, you get a couple drinks in you, and balls just start flying to the woods. You don't look for them. You don't look too hard for those ones.
Well, certainly not ones that are 6 feet below the surface of the water.
Yes. No, those are going to be tough.
I picked up a freshie pack of Pro V1s, and part of me was thinking, was that really necessary? So really quick, random subject. It is so hard for me to not buy them, though. I mean, I'm not a pro golfer. I would consider myself an above average golfer, and I can generate spin and whatnot with the ball. I don't think I need to be playing Pro V1s, but why don't I just buy them? Why do I do it?
I think it's the stigma, I think, behind playing a golf ball less than the Pro V. And even if you're playing, like, you're not playing the Pro V, if you're playing a top model from any other brand, you're paying within $5 or $6 per dozen compared to Pro V. So you might as well just buy the Pro Vs.
That is exactly where I was at. I'm at Golf Galaxy, and I bought Bridgestone last time. There's nothing wrong with them, but I'm staring at it again, and I'm like, the Pro Vs are literally $5 more. And the amount of, is it fair to say the amount of confidence that I have just standing over a Pro V ball? Like, it's just, it has that name recognition. I'm the guy who, I'm so, like, if I'm teeing up at a par three, I got to have a Pro V. What if I get a hole in one? I don't want a pinnacle up on my wall.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
So anyway, let's loop this back to Minnesota, the Classic, and just target golf in general. I have a feeling that our group alone is going to contribute at least 2 to 3 dozen golf balls to these courses over the span of the weekend. It just looks challenging.
Yes. You know, I think pace is going to be a big issue. Maybe not a big issue, but it's going to be an issue. There's some water out there. So yeah, just keep the ball in play. The golf courses are all really short. If you can just convince yourself that they're really short, just hit the ball in play with an iron, which I'm not going to do, but it's the thought that counts.
Yes. I'm glad that we're let's just get that out of the way now, because we both know we're not hitting any irons off the tee. But I think so for the listeners, this is Hunter, this is your third time going to this event, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So this will be my first time attending. I've been asked both years, Charleston and Gaylord, and it just didn't work out. So I'm excited to go for my first year. The place just looks awesome. I think, you know, obviously we'll have a better review of it after the trip, but based on everything I'm seeing before, it just looks like a really cool place. We've got like golf carts that we'll have for the weekend that we can just take back to the place that we're staying. There's a pool bar. Big exclamation point on the pool bar. And then obviously with it just being right on the lake, with access to the lake, you know, fishing and swimming in the lake, it just looks like an awesome time. So I'm super excited. And we'll certainly have a review for people, because it looks just like the perfect place for this, to do this kind of outing. So.
Oh yeah. No, I think it seems like it's really cost effective, in a good, it's in a spot I've never been, but I've heard really good things about Minnesota in the summertime. So, surrounded by lakes. I'm very much looking forward to it. And then we'll be in the car all day Sunday. So we'll have the BMW Championship on all day Sunday, so we'll have a good recap to have on Wednesday next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, anything else?
I think that's about it for me.
All right. Well, good luck with your picks to the BMW Championship, and we'll talk next week.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right, see you.